What's at stake for all of us as the Super Committee considers big changes to America's finances?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California and is supported by Reputation.com, monitoring, protecting, and improving reputations online while deleting personal data from the Internet. Reputation.com.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's going to be a busy weekend for the Congressional Super Committee. Lawmakers have just 5 days left to find $1.2 trillion in cuts to the deficit over the next 10 years. And it looks like there are at least three possible outcomes. A really impressive deal that gets the job done, a deal full of accounting tricks and rosy scenarios, or no deal at all, which would trigger automatic spending cuts. For more, let's bring in Mark Zandi, who is chief economist with Moody's Analytics, and he joins us live. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Mark, which of those three possibilities looks most likely to you at this point?
Well, Jeremy, I'll take a fourth option, and that is I think the Super Committee will come up with something substantive, not $1.2 trillion, but let's say half that. I think there's enough agreement on the committee to come up with about $600 billion in deficit reduction. And, of course, if they can do that, they'll avoid some of the more draconian automatic spending cuts that would occur otherwise in 2013.
And is that kind of sort of half solution going to be enough to satisfy the markets and avoid, for instance, another downgrade of U.S. debt?
Yes, I think that would be sufficient. I think if they did something counterproductive, gimmicks, as you said, That would be a problem. That would be the fodder for a downgrade, and that would be a problem for financial markets. If they came up with something really big and got it all together, that would be great. We'd be off and running. But I think they're going to come up with something that will just appease financial markets and we'll go on to the next step here.
And the next step, I assume, is putting things off until after the next election. Is there any sense that lawmakers are going to be in any better mood to make big, difficult decisions, whether it be budget cuts or tax increases, after the election of 2012 than they are now?
No, but to some degree they have no choice, because under current law, if they do nothing, tax rates for everybody will go up on January 1st, 2013. Those are the expiration of the so-called Bush tax cuts. So we're going to have to see a piece of tax legislation after the election. So they may not want to do it, but they'll have no choice.
And you don't think the Bush tax cut extension is going to be part or letting them expire is going to be part of this deal?
Well, it's hard to handicap all of this. It's possible, but I doubt it. I think that's too big a bite for them to chew. And so I think they'll have to wait till after the election to address it. And at that point, they'll have no choice, but they'll have to do something.
All right. Finally, the big question, Mark. What is at stake for ordinary Americans as we near this deal next week?
There's a lot at stake. If the Super Committee does something counterproductive, then we're going to have a problem. The economy is already fragile, and this could push it into recession. If they did something big, this would be really great and send us off to the races. Hopefully, they get it together well enough that they do no damage.
Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's Analytics, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed right now, down about 2% in Hong Kong, but they have turned higher across Europe, up 0.7% in Frankfurt and up 0.3% right now in Paris. President Obama watched a signing ceremony today in Indonesia between Boeing and the Indonesian airline Lion Air. That airline just bought 230 planes from Boeing in a $21 billion deal. That is the biggest commercial airplane order in Boeing history. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow dropped 134 points to close at 11,770.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, insuring more than 80 million customers worldwide and providing retirement solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S. AllianzUSA.com. And by Indiana University's Kelley School of Business, providing a personalized approach to career advancement. Learn more at kellei.iu.edu.
The United Nations said today that 250,000 people face imminent starvation in Somalia. A major famine there has already killed tens of thousands this year. Many Somalis have fled to refugee camps in Kenya. And as Marketplace's Scott Tong reports, it appears a new economy is starting up in the camps.
This is the sound of a permanent refugee camp. Schools, birthing centers, and convenience stores. This shack sprung up 2 months ago, built by Somali refugee Abdinasar Omar Ali. He hawks everything from shampoo packets to gumballs to spaghetti. Thank the Italian colonialists for that.
I used to be a very well-known businessman in Somalia. I sold auto parts from Mogadishu to Dubai.
But in the last couple of years, Islamic extremists known as Al-Shabaab destroyed his business model.
They would come to my shop, value my items, and say, you will pay us this much. Some businessmen gave 30% of their goods, others 50%.
This taxation is a key money source for Shabaab, as overseas support for the group has drifted away to jihadist battles elsewhere in Yemen and Saudi Arabia, says Tony Burns. He's with a Somali aid group.
Somalia has now become an economic backwater for international jihadis. Al-Shabaab has suffered accordingly. It is trying to raise new modes of taxation from within the indigenous population
and driving them out. Ali, the shop owner, packed up his wife and his 10 kids and paid smugglers $250 to get them out to Kenya. Here, he says his small business is already worth 50% more than when he started. Elsewhere in the camp, more entrepreneurs. A blacksmith, a tailor, a fruit seller. So many transplanted businessmen have left home. And yet, Somali-American Sadia Ali Aden clings to hope. She's just back from Mogadishu.
I met medical students. I met high school students. Mogadishu University became ranking 29th university in all of African colleges. This is the beauty of Somalia that people need to build on.
If and when peace comes to Somalia. Till then, hundreds of thousands of Somali entrepreneurs do their business on the outside. In the Dadaab refugee camp in Kenya, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And finally, to a man who is suing Bank of America. According to the Tampa Tribune, the man opened an account decades ago, and as of 2003, he had put about $59,000 into it. But when he checked his balance in 2005, the account only had $1,400 in it. The man alleges that Bank of America mixed up his account with another man of the same name. What name? Konstantinos Alexopoulos. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
There are a lot of weapons used in wars between nations. Take currency.
So if you cheapen the dollar, other countries retaliate. They cheapen their currencies as well. So it sounds good at first, but it degenerates and can be very dangerous.
Use with caution, though. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Currency Wars, next time on Marketplace. It's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.